All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, November 30th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. How you doing? It is 32 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. No snow. Any snow that we received back a couple days ago has long since melted, so I'm happy about that. Feel sorry for those of you on the west side of the front. I saw that there's lots of moisture and a lot of it in the form of ice and snow on its way. But hey, don't worry about that because the billionaires are all in France for the Climate Change Conference, COP21, and they're saying that it shouldn't be icy and cold because the planet is overheating. Oh, my God. 2 more degrees and we have gone tipped off the edge forever toward the sixth great mass extinction. Where do we leave off with the last show? Well, the last show was Thursday and we had a special on Thursday. We had JJ and Brandon Turville as guests talking about Syria and Turkey and some of the stuff going on in the Middle East. But on Tuesday, I believe, the last show that we did on this topic would be billionaires, GMO for climate change, and frozen DNA arc. And yes, we talked about a lot of different things, some of the different deals that are going on and how they're trying to get rid of meat. They've been pushing on us some of this Frankenstein food for a long time without us even knowing about it. And, of course, it is all being done in the name of climate change. We got to make sure we GMO all the food so we can grow in this new hostile environment that apparently is growing all around us. I think that's where we're going to continue today, is taking a look at the Climate Change Conference, taking a look at Maurice Strong. I know Ron from Game On talked about Maurice Strong in his last two shows. He was the UN pioneer in green diplomacy, according to the headlines. And apparently the man responsible for the climate change conference that is happening right now, starting today in Paris. Maurice Strong, UN pioneer in green diplomacy, dies at 86. And I believe that this was on Saturday. Maurice Strong's work helped usher in a new era of international environmental diplomacy at the 1972 Stockholm Conference. And, you know, growing up in the 70s and the 80s, I do remember climate change and CO2 and the ozone holes as being things that were being pushed back in those days. We had to be aware that, you know, one of these days it was going to be a runaway climate and we would turn into an environment such as Venus if we did not take care of things now. But in the meantime, the corporations were still pumping out AC units and refrigerators loaded with CFCs that were damaging the ozone. We had the oil companies and the chemical companies. I mean, we're talking 1972. Hooker Chemical and Union Carbide and all these other insane crossovers between corporate America and federal government dumping toxins left, right, and sideways into the environment without a thought or a blink of an eye about the future children or grandchildren. But hey, this climate change thing is all your fault. You bought the products that the corporations were making as they were trashing and raping the environment for profit. So now you're going to suffer. Anyway, let's get back to the Strong dude, Maurice Strong, whose work helped lead to the landmark climate summit that begins in Paris today, has died at age 86, the head of the UN's environmental agency said on Saturday. Sniff. Sniff in brackets. This is sadness. I'm feigning. Quote, Strong will forever be remembered for placing the environment on the international agenda and at the heart of development, says Achim Steiner, executive director of the UN Development Program. And you know, here's the thing. Yes, he's put it at the heart of the international agenda for development, just as Obama has put precision medicine and the e-economy as the central piece to bolstering the Western Hemisphere and getting back jobs and raising our GDP. It's all in the name of changing our outdated ways of 20th century of doing things to move us into this new realm of science and thinking about the world. And, you know, another thing that's so interesting, and I don't know if I have it here, if it was something I was watching upstairs, but one of the things that I keep hearing echo, because there's tons of videos, go out, hit the newest Pigmine feed, hit pigminenews.com and scroll down, and you'll see the grid of the last 50 with a load more at the bottom of all the videos uploaded. There's just been a plethora of videos over the last week or so all about climate change. And if you listen, one of the recurring themes you're going to keep hearing over and over again is how this is going to have to create a shift in the collective consciousness for us to all do our part to change our ways to save the world. So how are we going to change our ways, Mr. Strong? Mr. Strong, by the way, they did not release any of the details of his death. One of the things that I found in an expose interview that they did with him a few years ago, that I thought I was going to look to see whether or not maybe he had started bucking against the machine and maybe that was the reasoning for his untimely death. I don't know. But they did not release details of his death. He came out, I guess he lived in China for quite a number of years, and of course was pointing to China's pollution problem, which it has been. They've been selling canned air and face masks for quite a while now and have had these smog apocalypses going on. Remember, I told you, don't ever eat anything from China. But it was just interesting that Mr. Strong had lived in China. He did all kinds of economic development. He was involved in the environment and in energy. So he was actually playing both sides of the fence here. But as we have all this climate change coming down on top of us, we've been seeing a really disturbing trend. And that trend has been how there have been echoes now for a while. We've seen UN video after video talking about how wonderful bug protein is. And oh my God, how much there's more protein in bugs. Mealyworms will be better than a steak. We've seen the cheeseless cheese, the cowless cheese, the meatless meat, the chickenless chicken. Well, you know what? That wasn't an accident. And one of the things, so I went through and found a couple stories that I've been saving now for the last week or two. We've talked about, oh, I don't know, it was maybe a month ago, the UN had come out with a study discussing how now red meat, any meat in particular, now they think it gives you cancer, including processed meats, which we knew that. There's chemicals in processed meats. But, I mean, then they extended it to be any and all meat. Well, it gets even better because they released a story on the 20th of November telling us not only do we have to be careful about meat and all these other things that can cause cancer that you shouldn't be eating anymore that you love and enjoy, like bacon. everybody loves bacon. Avoid crunchy toast and crispy potatoes in home cooking, food experts warn. What? Oh, yes. How to avoid carcinogenic acrylamide in your kitchen. Now, the acrylamide, I thought, was that black stuff that forms when you burn anything, pretty much meat on a grill or toast. It's showing in a toaster, French fries in a stove. Crispy potatoes and crunchy toast may be one of the most enjoyable ways to get your fill of carbohydrates, but according to a new report by the UK's food safety body, a preference for having your starchy foods, quote unquote, well done could be posing some serious health risks. I mean, come on now. You're going to pick on my beef consumption, my chicken consumption, and now how I eat my toast. And you know, there was another story that I hate the way Facebook does this. I post all my stuff up here trying to make some semblance of the order for when I get back here. But I can't find the one where they were abusing any of the drinks that I drink, like the milk in my coffee. They were already threatening that I should feel guilty for putting milk in my coffee because, of course, it comes from cows, which fart too much and make too much methane in the environment. So I should be ready to give that up as well. Black coffee should be the way I like it. And, oh, by the way, coffee is not environmentally friendly either, I guess. So I better come up with an alternative to that. But anyway, let's get back to them bashing my toast. And I do like very toasty toast as well as very crispy meat. It says, while it's long been known that overcooking some foods can make them carcinogenic, a new study from the Food Standards Agency goes into new levels of detail on the dangers posed by acrylamide, a dangerous chemical substance that forms when starchy foods are cooked, and looks at how consumers can avoid creating it in the kitchen. Acrylamide, which can lead to cancer and damage to the nervous and reproductive systems, isn't a chemical that's added to food during manufacturing or farming process. Rather, it's totally natural, and it is a byproduct of cooking, formed during a chemical reaction between amino acids and sugars. The reaction is called the Maillard reaction, and often occurs when foods with high starch content are cooked at high temperatures, including frying, roasting, and baking. I mean, think about this. So we now are finding out that half the foods that we eat, oh, may cause cancer. Well, yeah, we knew that, but it wasn't the way we cooked them necessarily, rather than the ingredients that they're putting into the food that have been exposed over the last few years by people such as FoodBabe, who, of course, according to the mainstream outlets, is a complete and utter lunatic because she's been uncovering poisons. We've also found out things such as cloned beef, chickens, pigs have all been approved in rubber stamps since 2008 with no labeling required. But hey, don't worry about that. We don't really know, according to the USDA, how many cloned animals have ended up in the food supply. But don't worry about that, because you know what? They've been proven totally safe. GMOs in our food, without any labeling necessarily, soon to be no labeling whatsoever. And nutraceuticals on the plate coming full frontal to be able to make sure that we're healthy at some point in the future, especially when you silly Americans aren't getting the right nutrition because you've been addicted to high fructose corn syrup and carbohydrates. And now, of course, our toast and our potatoes, oh my God, cause cancer. Well, you know what? Problem, reaction, solution. Let's come up with a healthier way for everyone to eat. See, this is part of the PSYOP that they are trying to paint to us, that everything now that we are consuming, it isn't because they've been poisoning our food. Oh, no. It's because you've been cooking it wrong. It's not because they've been blasting the environment with toxins for 50 years at least, that things are so messed up? Oh, absolutely not. It's because the cows produce too much methane. They want to change the entire paradigm. No more meat for you. There's not enough on the planet with the number of people that we have. We will dictate what you eat. It'll be in a nice, clean package, and it will not contribute to future climate change. That is how they are going to create this new paradigm to try to make this new way of eating without knowing what you're eating, because it's good for everybody. And see, there are so many people that are buying into this. I mean, I had friends posting the story going, oh my God, my toast and potatoes cause cancer. I can't eat them anymore, and I can't eat bacon, and I can't eat meat. I guess I'm eating too much meat. Maybe we should all start getting healthy. And hey, I'm not against getting healthy. You know, maybe we shouldn't be eating 6 Big Macs. Shouldn't be eating any Big Macs, honestly. I mean, despite the fact of antibiotics in the meat and the gut flora issue that happens and whatever, I got to tell you, I saw one video that convinced me beyond anybody showing me any statistics about anything about McDonald's that made me say that I will never, ever eat there again. And it was probably the most disturbing video I've ever seen. And I'm not going to recount it because it's first thing in the morning, but it was horrific. Hit me up individually and I'll tell you what happened in the video if you really want to know. But it was really, really, really amazingly, just cruelly, horribly. I couldn't even believe what I was seeing. Anyway, let's get back to the story. So they're creating this entire mental environment now that our food is part of the problem, the way we eat it, the way we cook it, to the illness and all of the problems that are happening in our environment. And of course, when our environment goes bad, we get sick. Our food isn't growing the proper nutrients. It has nothing to do with the glyphosate that's being sprayed all over it that chelates out essential minerals out of the organisms that consume it. No, that isn't it at all. It's the fact that our environment is damaged. We have to now put nanoparticles into the soil. I just saw a story about that. Wait, where was it? Nanoparticles into the soil to be able to beef the nutrients up in the new GMO tomatoes, antioxidants from nano-sized nutrients, get it to suck it right up into the plant, and then, of course, you can consume it. Anyway, back to the story. Essentially, the hotter you cook your food and the longer you cook it for will determine the amount of acrylamide you produce, which is why the burnt and blackened foods are particularly high in this toxic substance. The kinds of foods in which acrylamide is generally found includes potatoes, bread, toast, cakes, biscuits, and, oh my God, coffee! Yes, coffee again. Coffee has acrylamide. While we can't avoid exposure to acrylamide entirely, the way we cook and consume food can make a huge difference to the amount that we ultimately consume. For example, even in chips, the sample with the highest level of acrylamide food shows a deep golden brown color and some chips lightly burnt contained 1,062 micrograms per kilogram, whereas the palest chips contained almost 50 times less, which was just 26 micrograms per kilogram. In roasted potatoes, crispy or brown potatoes, it contained 490 kilogram or micrograms per kilogram, while the lightest, barely roasted vegetables contained only 6. Toast samples range from 6 for very pale white bread to 168 for very toasted brown bread. So look out, people. You better eat it raw. And they do say raw food is much better for you. I don't know, I was reading something about biophotons, and I still need to dig more into that. I want to talk to LaVon about that, because I know she's done a show way back when about biophotons, but there seems to be some sort of nutrient energy, almost, that they are finding in raw foods versus cooked foods, and depending on how you cook it, of course, the more it is cooked, the less biophotons it has. And I'm not really sure what a biophoton is, whether it's a light particle that comes from photosynthesis that's been stored within the plant itself that then can be converted to energy, which if you look at physics, I mean, that's definitely a possibility. But regardless of that, don't cook anything now because it causes cancer. I mean, when I read these stories, and it's not like we haven't been doing this shit for 100 years, toasting toast and cooking potatoes over a campfire in the Wild West. I don't know what makes it so much more dangerous now than it was 100 years or more back. 200 years back, even, let's say. But regardless, they have to hit the point home that the way we do things now and the things that we eat are not good for us. Okay, that's the whole new mantra. They need to completely shift global consciousness a few degrees to the right to make their new evil plan work without resistant consumers, remember. Resistant consumers will thwart the entire plan. Anyway, Nevertheless, chips and toast with the highest levels of acrylamide did look noticeably darker and more brown than the corresponding samples with the lowest levels, says researchers. And given that participants often only classed foods as being done after visual inspection for color, this suggests that the consumer preference does play a role in potential acrylamide exposure. And they, of course, give a detailed list of the study on a PDF. And I'll put this in the notes of the show if you're really interested. But I really think that this is just one step. And this is a report for the Food Standards Agency. One step forward in many steps to changing the global psyche in regards to what is appropriate and what is not appropriate to eat. You know, as we have 70%, I believe I read the other day, 70% of consumers surveyed have said they don't want GMO foods. And then we saw a story that it talked about the way to market GMOs at some of these new startup conventions that are going on all over Silicon Valley. And remember, there are all kinds of tech titans investing not only in the precision medicine and longevity and being able to live forever, but also into genetically modified foods, but not in the old way of genetic modification, in the new fancy way of genetic modification to be able to spin it so they don't call it genetically modified, right? They said, we don't call it GMOs anymore. We need to sell it as healthy. So as they're flipping switches on and off and changing things within our potatoes and our apples and our bananas and the meats to make them healthier, that will be what wins the hearts and minds of resistant consumers and gets that 70% who wants nothing to do with GMOs on board because they're dangerous to future profits. Remember, it's all about money. All right, we talked about, too, the CEO of McDonald's leaving and going to that new company called Beyond Meat, which I believe has some funding from good old Billy Gates. Yes, it does. And they're going to make chicken that's not chicken. We talked about the tomatoes with the antioxidants. We talked about the test tube meat that has gone from 300 and some odd $1,000, $325,000. Of course, it was a project funded by Google co-founder Sergey Brin. Yes. And how funny that we've been finding that Google and Microsoft, good old Bill Gates, Sergey Brin, Elon Musk. I always forget his name. Craig Venter. He's another one. Patrick Thiel, he's another one. The same names keep coming up over and over again when it comes to any of these new technologies, as well as any of these longevity medicines or cures for malaria or whatever, gene drives. It's the same people. Well, guess what? They happen to be also the same people who are now attending the global conference in Paris. Of course, in Paris, where we have 120,000 troops on the streets right now because, of course, we had a terror attack a few weeks ago. And that terror attack has started all kinds of different events happening now down a chain reaction, which all of it is leading to this quote unquote new world order of things, and it's going to be from every different level, keeping you safe from everything. This one happens to be keeping you safe from climate change. Let's see if this works.
The world again are on Paris. President Obama and nearly 150 other global leaders are gathered there in the face of heightened terror fears. The president spoke minutes ago to the largest ever summit on climate change. He said, quote, we have come to Paris to show our resolve. And he called the conference an act of defiance after the Paris terror attacks.
The summit began this morning with a moment of silence to honor recent terror victims. A CBS News New York Times poll out this morning shows most Americans support the goal of the conference. 66% say the U.S. should join an international treaty to reduce global warming. 54% say protecting the environment is more important than stimulating the economy. Margaret Brennan is in Paris, where security concerns threaten to overshadow the talks. Margaret, good morning.
Good morning. 147 world leaders are gathered here in Paris for a long-planned climate change conference. It poses the biggest security challenge since those terror attacks hit this city 2 weeks ago.
The world's two biggest polluters, China and the U.S., kicked off the climate change summit.
It is our responsibility to take action.
A pledge made as smog climbed to dangerously high levels in China.
I'm going to stop for a second, too. Interesting, us in China, we are the two biggest polluters ever in the world, yet we are also the two countries that are working on all kinds of mad science. Remember, China was genetically modifying cows to produce human milk. We read about a 300 cloned cows that then they did in vitro fertilization of some genetically modified embryos that inserted human milk genes in place of the cow milk genes. We also have them genetically modifying embryos and all kinds of other things. We have the genetically modified pigs, too, we talked about a few weeks ago, that are coming out of China and potentially hitting the market in Canada and here.
The goal in Paris is to limit global warming to 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit from pre-industrial levels. But the terror threat is diverting attention. The president's first stop on French soil was to pay his respects last night at the Bataclan Theater, site of the worst of the Paris attacks. France remains on high alert. A 120,000-strong security force is stationed across the country. Riot police have been deployed in unprecedented numbers.
Yes, yeah, so there's 120,000, and they didn't say if they were police or military, but I know right after the attacks, they had 10,000 military on the ground, so I'm going to assume that it is a combination of both. But yeah, one of the things in regards to the lockdown on France after the quote-unquote terror attack was that they were going to prevent protesting, and there was protest. There were protests yesterday that turned violent, and people were getting pepper sprayed and tear gassed, and that's what's going on in this video right now from yesterday.
On Sunday, 174 protesters were arrested for defying the government ban on demonstrations.
Oh my God, there was like hosefuls of mace being sprayed into the crowd.
The agent Bruce Tully has spent 40 years protecting dignitaries around the world.
I think this is one of the highest risk environments I've seen professionally in my career. There's so much threat analysis out there, not just from ISIS, copycats, but also because of the protesters for the conference itself.
Environmentalists silently protested the ban on their march, leaving their shoes in the square they had hoped to walk through. But as with so much in this still mourning city, life marches on.
Here in Paris, President Obama also discussed the fight against ISIS with the presidents of France and China. And White House officials say he'll likely have a chance for what's sure to be another difficult chat with Russia's Vladimir Putin about his role in the battle against ISIS.
You know, and Putin, of course, is at this conference as well. So, I mean, we just had the G20 in Turkey a few weeks ago. While this Paris thing was going on, I believe, or shortly thereafter. And then, of course, we had the jet, the Russian jet that was shot down by Turkey. And now everything that's taking place there, I saw Russia put sanctions against Turkey as well. So now everyone's getting back together again, but it's all about climate change. But see, they seem unrelated, but they are related. It is all this global march toward taking full control and taking full control of our food supply. Of course, I don't remember what great dignitary it was who made some comments about that, but somebody in history had talked about when you own the food supply, you own the people. And that is exactly what is happening. And of course, like, how much better can it be? Own the food supply and do experiments on the people. Here's a story. They're also going after cocktails. Sustainable cocktails and zero waste bars are changing how you drink. So it's not about even just the food, it's your alcohol as well. Says no additional ice was dumped into the sink and lemon peels were set aside as garnishes. Even the gin bottle has been manufactured for reuse and the labels peel off easily. The typical cocktail bar is a trash machine, and notwithstanding plenty of eco-talk circulating among breweries, wineries, and distilleries, the dialogue has gone so far bypassing the consumption side. I mean, it is being pushed on every single level now in the food industry. I saw another one the other day. We talked about bird flu. I had mentioned a few days ago my daughter doing a 33-page research paper on turkeys and asking me at dinner whatever happened to the bird flu. And I was like, you know what, honey, good thinking, because we haven't seen anything much about that, especially while Thanksgiving was coming. You didn't hear anything mentioned at all. But while they were culling some amazing number of birds, and I don't remember, it was like 36 million or 46 million birds or whatever, and they wiped out a good number of poultry in Iowa, where they have the largest egg production in the United States, and then announced, oh, well, we're going to allow imported eggs now, but we won't be labeling them due to the egg shortage, but don't worry about that. Found a story that we must have missed when it came out. This is back from June of 2015. Again, messing with our food. The avian flu outbreak that has seen 44 million U.S. birds culled, so at least 44 million by June 5th, could mean the end of eggs. Yes, well, more ways to get protein. And it could absolutely mean the end of eggs to you and me. Now, remember, they just recently told us that they discovered, after all these years of telling us that cholesterol was bad for us, they finally told us that, whoops, we were wrong. Cholesterol is good for you. And as a matter of fact, this epidemic of dementia might have something to do with the fact that your brain is made of cholesterol and you've been eating all these horrible low-fat, low-cholesterol foods, and we've been putting you on statins and damaging your liver. Oh, yes. Well, we might see the end of eggs. And again, you know, we'll see this under the guise of climate change. Says America is facing a major egg crisis due to bird flu. And yes, of course, bird flu, it's spreading. And I mean, I don't know why it's gone out of the headlines. They do that. I'm sure it'll come back and it'll be raging even worse than it was before. But bird flu spreading, I'm sure somewhere along the way, they're going to be able to blame it on the warmer temperatures as to why it's become so virulent and spreads throughout populations so quickly. Says America is facing a major egg crisis due to bird flu, and they say 25% of all the country's egg production is already offline due to the virus, with more producers expecting to be hit. You know, and here's another thing. After all these illnesses and things that we've been seeing, remember we had that pig disease. And it wasn't a swine flu. It was a disease that was giving the piglets horrible diarrhea, and they were dying of dehydration. We, of course, had the pig flu or the bird flu. And then with the cattle, we had the droughts. Again, climate change. We had to slaughter millions of cattle, which caused the prices of everything to go up. And over the last year especially, we've seen, I would have to say, double-digit increases in the cost of weekly shopping just for your groceries. And now as all labeling is being erased here to tell us where food comes from. Remember, our country of origin labels were voted to be against international law by the World Trade Organization after Canada and Mexico came at us about how unfair it was that we were labeling their beef. the World Trade Organization said you don't, you know, it was illegal for our country to be labeling where stuff came from. And so we removed the labeling laws. So as the prices of everything are going up and as we are not being told not only what's in our food, that's that new labeling act that's coming, the what are they calling it? The Truth in Labeling Act, a.k.a. the Dark Act, which, of course, is all geared toward how unfair it is if you label GMOs. So we're going to get rid of those, too. And then, of course, the TPP that pretty much gets rid of any type of labeling as well. You know, you see the full agenda. You will not be eating, and it's all going to come down to 3D printed bug protein, right? That's the end result. 3D printed bug protein loaded with whatever nutraceutical, quote unquote, which means nanoparticulates or mad science gone mad, some nutraceutical that they discovered that they want to test out on a population. That's what it's coming down to, and all in the name of sustainability. Since this represents a major blow to the egg product ingredients that the bakers rely upon, and without quickly accessing additional supplies, bakers will face a dire situation. But I want to get down to the plant-based. Hold on. I don't want to really read about, like, all the states. I'm having a flash issue at the moment. But I will sing, remember, dee-dee-dee. Oh, God. Yes, they're going to put it in mayo. That was one of the things. They were talking about this egg substitute. And not that egg substitutes haven't been around, but they still, I believe, contain some eggs. Here, Hampton Creek, based in San Francisco, analyzed thousands of plants to make a mix that can replicate mayonnaise. Its best-known product, called Just Mayonnaise, is a mayonnaise that uses a type of Canadian yellow pea as a substitute for eggs. The firm may also make a range of flavored mayonnaise products as well as cookie dough, and its products are available at Costco, Dollar Tree, Walmart, and Whole Foods. So that's the eggless mayonnaise. And I just was reading about something else. It says, as far as the chickens go, after a backyard flock in northeastern Indiana tested positive in early May, they are all now starting to take the same response, and that is culling their chickens. 45 million birds in 16 states as well as Canada apparently had the virus as well. And the department, I missed this one, they asked the Department of Corrections to also begin training nonviolent offenders to help cull any of the birds. And they tested at least 50 inmates. They fitted them for respirators and began training them on how to remove chickens from cages and asphyxiate the birds. How awful is that? Oh, yes. Planned eugenics. All right. Well, I'm running out of time here and I've been really babbling. But here, let's get to some of the meat and potatoes, no pun intended. So, all right, we've been seeing a lot of echoes. Here's one from the 27th. Can eating less meat really help to reduce global warming? One of the world's most influential think tanks has co-authored a report with the University of Glasgow that takes on livestock production and its impact on global warming, as well as our overconsumption of meat. Published on November 24th, the report makes a compelling argument for reducing our consumption of meat, or it will be almost impossible to avoid. Yes, passing the 2 degrees Celsius danger level. Pointing out the main goal of the COP21 meeting held in Paris this week, being the reduction of greenhouse gases, authors Laura Wellesley, Catherine Happer, and Anthony Foggerat say that forcing the public to eat less meat will not only be healthier, yes, of course, nutraceuticals. Remember, we got to spin it. We got to spin it. So we don't talk about GMOs. We talk about the healthier alternatives. So not only will we be forcing the public to eat less meat that will be healthier, but we will help reduce greenhouse gases. They say, quote, our appetite for meat is a major driver of climate change. Well, damn you, you meat eaters. It's all your fault. See, they are really, really, really trying to spin the get rid of meat. It's not for you and me. The $15 steaks now are not for you and me. The billionaires are now in control. You eat the dirt and the maggots, and they'll eat the meat. Of the 120 national plans already submitted to the COP21, only 21 plans have commitment to reduce livestock production. And reducing consumption of livestock appears in none of the plans, says the BBC, which is a good thing. One reason for not having a plan to cut consumption of meat in the public's diet is the fear of many governments of a backlash from voters. Right, wait until after the elections. But the study has also found that most people want a government that will take lead on serious issues. Yes, the babies who don't know how to do things for themselves. One of the key findings in the report is the low level of public awareness over livestock production's role in elevated greenhouse gases. Livestock production amounts for 15% of all global emissions, equivalent to all the exhaust emissions from the vehicles in the world. Meat consumption at the goal level is on the rise. The study found, and there is a significant difference in consumption of industrialized countries and developing and third world nations. The U.S. has the highest level of meat consumption per person per day. So, hey, since we're the highest, we're going to be the top target. And in India, the figures are much lower at 10 grams per day per person. Overconsumption of meat, of course, has led to a rise in obesity, cancer, and type 2 diabetes, and is predicted that by 2050, consumption of meat worldwide is expected to rise at least 75% unless something is done. Oh, my God. I mean, you guys see, this is all intertwined. The climate change has nothing to do with the corporations. It has everything to do with you and your taste for meat. Besides addressing global warming along with meat consumption, the study suggests that governments must take the lead in spearheading efforts to reduce the unsustainable consumption of meat. And this is going to be everything, the unsustainability of everything. But we know what's good for you, and you know what? It's going to be healthier too. That type 2 diabetes, obesity, and cancer didn't come from the glyphosate spread on everything. No, we didn't look at a study about the CYP450 enzyme and its relation to being exposed to glyphosate and all of the Western diseases it causes that happen in a cascade. No, that has nothing to do with anything. It has nothing to do with all the antibiotics injected into the animals. No. It's all about climate change. And how will all this be done? Well, this is a question that needs to be discussed at top government levels and with the public. And of course, the public has to be educated in the reasons behind a reduction in livestock production, along with the benefits of eating a healthier diet. Does this mean that there's going to be a new tax on meat? Well, yeah, maybe. Kind of like the new tax on carbon. But through serious discussions, we should be able to find a better way to reduce our consumption of meat that doesn't hurt our pocketbook. Well, right. Because when we find out that the $325,000 test tube meat, which of course is going to be ecologically friendly, has now gone down to $11 a burger. Hey, that's not going to hurt your pocketbook at all. Well, hold on. We'll see if we can connect again. I actually queued up a couple good videos. I told you they've been harping on climate change here for the last week or so and all of our alternatives to eating.
Tonight, a look at the growing phenomenon of meatless protein. Americans eat the equivalent of 322 quarter-pound burgers per person every year. That's three times as much beef as the world average. And with each pound requiring more than 50 gallons of water, producers in drought-stricken California are looking to find other ways to get protein into our diets. Our story comes to us from Dr. James Hamblin, a senior editor at The Atlantic Magazine.
I'm here at the Bon Appetit Food Tech Conference in San Francisco,
where startups are competing to replace animal meat with new sustainable sources of protein.
Insect protein combines nutritional density of animal protein with the environmental efficiency of plant protein.
We do not put insects anywhere in or around our product.
Wait. Give that guy a QP now. The guy before, of course, is insect protein supplements. The other dude says, we do not put insects anywhere near our product. Thank God.
Using pea protein and bran rice protein.
With the soy, we ferment it just to the very tiny pieces.
While the industry is divided on exactly what protein source is best, it is in agreement that animal meat alternatives will be necessary to feed the rapidly expanding world population. The Los Angeles-based startup Beyond Meat has invented some plant-based chicken and beef that's getting particular attention from investors, like Bill Gates. And unlike most vegan products, they look a lot like traditional meat.
All right, what should I try first?
All the meat on this table is made from peas.
It's a little chewier than your traditional chicken. Very close.
Jody Polizzi is a Stanford professor of structural biology. He says that building meat out of plant protein is a challenge, though chicken is easier than beef.
Chicken's easier to do than beef just because, you know, the texture of a chicken breast is pretty uniform, the color's uniform.
It's really a proper scientific laboratory focused on deconstructing and then rebuilding the experience of meat.
So what you're looking at right here is a gas chromatograph that's hooked up to a mass spec instrument. And what that gives us is a measurement of what meat tastes like. Essentially, it's a fingerprinting of what flavor and aroma exists in meat already.
Ethan Brown is the founder and CEO of Beyond Meat.
So we're taking protein directly from a pea, and we're using heating, cooling, and pressure to align it in the form of meat. That's it.
Yeah.
We have to be able to figure out a way to describe that to consumers so that they understand that what they're having is basically pea protein in the form of meat.
Sounds.
Which pea protein, I guess, is a hell of a lot better than mealyworms. But still, the fact of the matter is they want to take away our meat.
It's like processed food. I don't eat processed food. I was told not to eat processed
food. I worked so hard to say that.
No meat at all is the American future.
Meat is really made of those five constituent parts, the amino.
Did you hear that? No meat at all is the American future.
No acids, lipids, carbohydrates, minerals, and water. They're all actually present in plants. What we're doing is building a piece of meat directly from those plants. And so the compositions are basically the same.
Right.
And in that case, we are delivering meat.
Meat that the American consumer needs to be convinced might be as good as the beef or pork they're accustomed to eating.
So you study sort of the sociological aspect of people's reactions to these foods?
So it's the whole performance around the food. So it's the words that are being used. It's the packaging. It's where it's located within the supermarket.
It's the words, it's the packaging, it's where it's located within the supermarket. Here we go with the marketing spin and how to convince uneducated people, quote unquote, yes, to eat meatless meat.
Although Beyond Meat is already available nationally at Whole Foods, Walmart, and other select retailers at prices comparable to animal meats, product placement does influence sales.
Because of my height, they put it up here. So here are some of the packages.
Here with tofu.
Right. And so the whole challenge for us is how do we make the decision process seamless for the consumer so that they're doing something that is exactly like what they do with animal protein and the products behave exactly like they do with animal protein. I do believe that in, you know, 10 years or so, you'll be able to come in here and there'll be meats in here that are made from different plants. There'll be a lupin beef, there'll be a camelina, you know, any manner of plant feedstock. And the consumer can choose which type of beef they want. The days of this just being animal protein, I think, are rapidly coming to a close.
And they're standing looking at a butcher counter.
Maybe not rapidly, but all the factors are in place that could lead to a shift in our collective thinking about meat.
Beyond Meat is currently available at 10,000 locations, with major expansion slated for the new year. Maybe when plant-based meats are at our fingertips, we'll do the American thing. Eat them. For PBS NewsHour, I'm James Hamblin in El Segundo, California.
This is so disturbing to me. I mean, this is this global agenda now that they are taking away our meat. I mean, they literally, this is now part of this whole COP21. Meat is causing global change. Unsustainable food. I mean, factory farming, yes, they can blame a lot of it on factory farming, but it isn't the fact that you want to eat meat. It's the fact that they're farming wrong. It's the fact that they're doing things that cause issues. They're spraying chemicals. They're injecting animals. Here, this is a story that came out on the 27th as well. A meat tax to reduce global warming? Well, yes. The best way to reduce global warming would be to tax your meat so people would consume less of it, says a British think tank. A tax proposed by the Chatham House would be a part of a broader effort to reduce meat consumption by 14%, and the tax would be about $1 per pound. Quote, meat consumption can no longer be ignored in the climate debate. Shifting diets to less meat and more plant proteins will be crucial, says Claire Oxborough, a spokeswoman for the Friends of the Earth. Oxborough's organization is one of a number of environmental and animal rights groups promoting the tax in the United Kingdom. Quote, we are not in any way advocating for a global vegetarianism, she says. But we can see massive changes to emissions from just converging around healthy levels of meat eating, unquote. Wellesley's team studied public attitudes in 12 countries in order to determine if there was public support for reducing meat consumption. They found that there was some support for reducing government subsidies for meat and even a tax if it was seen to be implemented in the name of the public good. Environmentalists favor a meat tax because they calculate that meat production creates 15% of the greenhouse gases blamed for global warming. According to them, meat production adds more greenhouse gases to the atmosphere than all of the vehicles in the world. And that's what that other story just said as well. Chatham House tried to see what the public response to such taxes would be by holding focus groups around the world, and the research found that a quote-unquote carbon tax on meat would be the most effective means of reducing meat consumption and production. Now, is that like New York State? They put the soda tax on because they said that New Yorkers were too fat and they couldn't get their big gulps anymore. And then they put the cigarette tax on because smoking's not good for you. So let's make sure we jack them up so they are $10 a pack in New York. And we'll force people to stop drinking large high fructose corn syrup sodas and smoking dangerous cancer sticks. Well, now, just like they said, they're going to force the public to stop eating meat by pricing us out as well. Our focus groups show people expect governments to lead actions on issues that are for the global good, says Wellesley. And our research indicates that any backlash to unpopular policies would likely be short-lived as long as the rationale for action was strong. Yeah, until you brainwash the masses to convince them they don't need to eat meat so then they can use peer pressure on the resistant consumers. This tax will be part of an organized campaign to reduce meat consumption, which would include public education efforts similar to what, oh yes, anti-smoking campaigns and the elimination of meats from the school lunchroom, the military mess halls, the hospital cafeterias, and other government-run eateries. And the money from the taxes would be used to finance alternative meats, such as vegetarian foods. All right. And last but not least, the compact incubator lets you cultivate your mealyworms for food. This is going to be the hottest thing on your Christmas list this year. If there was a global Agenda 21, COP21 gift on your favorite environmentalist gift list, this would be it.
When I first bit into a mealworm 2 years back, I admit it was a bit weird. But shortly after, I was really pleased about the crispy texture and the neutral taste. So, you know, eating insects for me was also overcoming a hurdle in the beginning. But taking this first step was really worth it.
Yes.
I grew up on a farm in Austria, where bringing your own food on the table is an everyday thing. Since I moved to the city, however, I found it hard to find information about how and where my food is produced, and whether it is actually healthy. I asked myself, what if I could just grow my own healthy and sustainable food independently in my own home? Now, thinking about a city apartment, there's really not a lot you can grow in sufficient amounts at home, and there are barely any solutions for growing protein. That's why I designed a farm to grow insects in a small space inside my home. This project took me on a journey all around the world. 2 years and lots of research and prototyping later, me and my team at Livin' Farms are now launching the world's first edible insect desktop hive.
It's a desktop hive. Oh, my God. And notice how she said she lived in the city. She couldn't find out where her food came from or whether or not it was even healthy.
But why grow insects? Most of your food comes from places like this. Industrial livestock production costs us one-third of the fertile cropland worldwide and 80% of all antibiotics. This system pollutes the planet and makes us sick.
And the worst thing is that you, as a consumer, have little chance of making a conscious choice.
With our hive, you can grow healthy mealworms in a small space in your home. They combine the best of meat and plant-based proteins while taking only a quarter of the feed and 10% of the land that is usually required to grow the same amount of beef.
And there you go, guys. We're about out of time. So make sure you get your Mealy Worm Livin' Farms desktop hive and start growing your own sustainable Mealy Worm crunchy salad protein fixins. All right, guys, make sure everyone sticks around because today is Monday, which means that Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. I don't know. Oh, there we go. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. And we have a brand new Truth on the Tracks tonight, Antimedia Radio at 11 p.m. with Nick and DeBe. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Monday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.